Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, where we let down what's left of my hair. And we loosen the tie, which, by the way, is a real bow tie.
That's right. I taught myself how to tie a bow tie today.
God, I wish I was a kid these days. When I was growing up, back in my day, when I was growing up and you wanted to learn how to tie a bow tie, by God, you had to find an old guy at the barber shop to teach you. Nowadays, you just log on to that YouTube and there's a video there to tell you right how to do it. I mean, really, anything you want to learn today, you can find it on YouTube, you can find it on Wikipedia, you can find a website for it. There is a way to learn it. I'm beginning to think that the point of college is almost obsolete. Like, sometimes I get this thought that maybe I had to go back to school and get a degree. And then I think, why? Anything I want to learn, it's right there. All right. As promised, we have an update on the High Times Cannabis Cup taking place this weekend in Las Vegas, Nevada. As we were telling you yesterday, there was some interference, a letter written by the feds saying that the feds can still enforce cannabis laws. We now go to local news in Las Vegas for an update.
Now, organizers for a competition called the Cannabis Cup now say people will no longer be able to smoke pot this weekend after a warning from the federal government. 13 Action News reporter Tom George is joining us live near Flamingo in Arville with more on that. Tom.
Well, Steve, at dispensaries like this, just to get where we're standing, you have to go through security. You have to show a card, and that's before you can even get anywhere near the counter. But this weekend at the Cannabis Cup on tribal lands, it was supposed to be a different story. But now a letter from the Justice Department is forcing them to change their plans. For people in the marijuana industry, it's one of the biggest prizes.
For lack of better analogy, it's the Oscars for the cannabis industry.
And this weekend, the green carpet with headliners like Ludacris coming to Las Vegas. Growers and producers had hoped to vie for the Cannabis Cup.
I think it's, you know, it's a tag they like to wear. A Cannabis Cup winner or second place.
This is the first year the Cup is coming to Nevada since recreational marijuana was legalized in November. But the Trump administration has called for increased enforcement of federal regulations.
Historically, been a free-for-all, and now it's coming into a state that's very regulated.
The Cup will be hosted on Moapa tribal land, willing to allow pot, but leaders there recently got a letter from the Justice Department saying no marijuana. The apothecary shop at Flamingo in Arville, which is run by doctors, had a table set up at the event.
These are a variety of strains, different strains of cannabis.
But that table will now have to just be informational. There will be no product allowed at all.
I hope the new administration will be respectful of states' rights, as they said they would be during the campaign.
In the meantime, organizers say the competition will now just be a concert, celebrating the passage of Question 2.
There, of all the people there, there'll be some smoking, regardless of, it's like, there's a speed limit sign up on the freeway. It's there. It's not always obeyed.
Now, in the meantime, organizers say they're excited about legislation being looked at in the Assembly this session that would figure out how to implement Question 2 so that by this time next year, they may be able to have public events where they will allow pot. Reporting live, Tom George, 13 Action News.
So that's what we're getting out of Las Vegas. The Cannabis Cup is not canceled, but it is going to be a no-smoking, no-samples event. And here's where things get difficult. You make this a no-samples event, and like that guy said, people are going to be smoking anyway. And so then the opponents of marijuana are going to say, see, look, you legalize and people don't follow the rules and they just go out and they smoke pot anyway, even though you say there's no public consumption, yada, yada, yada. And to add a big injury to injury, to insult, I guess, in Nevada, the law that was just passed mandates a $600 fine for public toking. And it's a misdemeanor. It's a criminal misdemeanor. So some of these people go into the Cannabis Cup thinking that, oh, it's the Cannabis Cup, I can smoke pot. Maybe they don't watch the news. They don't realize they're not looking at signs. They go and smoke. Who knows? There's an undercover there. There's a cop there. Who knows? Next thing, you got these people getting a misdemeanor, having a $600 fine. Is that something that anybody's concerned about? All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got a story on, well, actually I'm going to talk about the idea of impairment testing. It's something we promote a lot here on the show, but like all testing methods, it's got its problems too. Talk about that when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hard! Well, I hate to interrupt you when you need it, but you done filled it up.
This isn't normal. But on meth, it is.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day. Exclusively on RadicalRust.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, SoundCloud, Snapchat, LinkedIn, and Boise State University's 2400 baud modem bulletin board system from 1985.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 9 after the hour. And in this segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about impairment testing. And something we've been calling for here in the marijuana movement for quite some time. Because as we know, the chemical methods of testing people for marijuana are, or for drugs, I should say, discriminate against people who smoke marijuana. The urine tests can show the metabolites of marijuana in our system for times that are measured in days or weeks. When it comes to other drugs, the times are measured in hours. So, you know, people that snort cocaine or shoot heroin or smoke meth on a Friday could test completely clean on a Monday. But someone who smokes pot on a Friday could lose their job on a Monday. So we've been calling for an end to this drug testing based on our urine, on our saliva, on our hair. We've also pointed out that when it comes to drug testing on the roadways, while there is a reliable breathalyzer device that we've got for alcohol, there is no compatible device, no compatible science, no comparable science that works for marijuana. Marijuana works differently on everybody depending on their body type, on their metabolism, on their experience. There's just no way to set a reliable number on some machine that's testing our breath or saliva or hair or urine that's going to work. So, in response to that, our side has been promoting the idea of impairment testing. Now, there's a number of impairment testing apps out there. There's one called My Canary. Normal promotes that. There's another one I was looking up today called Druid, which is an iPad device. And the guy behind this is named Dr. Michael Milburn. He's at University of Massachusetts, Boston. And so this is another one of these impairment tests, iPad based. And so the way that it works is it has four different things that it can test through this app. It takes about 5 minutes, and they screen for driving impairment based on either could be drug use, could be alcohol, could be fatigue, could be sickness, whatever it might be, things that confound your hand-eye coordination and your balance and your reaction time and so forth. So here's what they test on this app. They have a reaction time and decision-making portion where shapes flash on the screen for a half second, either a square or a circle. So when you're told one of them is the target, could be the square or the circle, right? So you're supposed to touch the square, let's say, if they pick the square, you're supposed to touch the square when it shows up for a half second. But if a circle shows up, you got to touch a different button all the way at the top of the screen. So based on that, if your times aren't so good and your accuracy isn't so good at touching the square when you're supposed to, that's supposed to indicate that you have an impairment problem. The next one, reaction time, time estimation, and divided attention tasks. This one, man, I don't know how well I'd do with this sober. It requires you to press start and for 60 seconds. Okay, so you press start and you're supposed to press stop 60 seconds later. But it's up to you to estimate how long 60 seconds is. Now, this is because they say, when you're on marijuana, there's that time perception problem, right? So people that are stoned supposedly are going to have a harder time estimating accurately how long 60 seconds are. But while this is going on, while you're trying to keep track if 60 seconds have passed, randomly these circles flash on the screen for a half second, and you've got to touch the circle and count how many circles you ended up touching. So you're touching and keeping track of a number of circles and trying to keep track of the passage of 60 seconds time at the same time. And if you get a bad score on that, supposedly you're impaired. Another one is motor tracking and divided attention tasks. A circle moves around the screen, sometimes jumps a distance, and you've got to keep your finger on the circle as much as you can. While that's going on, while you're keeping your finger on the circle that sometimes hyperspaces over to another spot, while that's going on, you've also got to count how many squares flash on the screen at that time while you're tracing the circle. If you score badly on that, supposedly you're too impaired. And then finally, balance. This is one where you're instructed to stand on one leg for 30 seconds and hold the iPad in your opposite hand. Keep the iPad as still as possible. So the problem with this, number one, is dealing with people with disabilities, right? Like people that might have problems with their eye tracking based on a medication that they're taking that's not impairing them, but does cause a problem with eye tracking, or people that have vision problems, or people that have paralysis or spastic sort of disorders that can't keep their hands steady to track a little circle on an iPad, or people who have artificial limbs who might have trouble balancing on one leg, or I mean, there's all sorts of confounders right there when you think about it. But the other problem with this is that, and this is reading from their thing, the Druid output. Druid produces measures of reaction time, errors in decision-making, motor tracking, time estimation, and balance, and an algorithm integrates these measures into an overall measure of impairment. When you do a test run, Druid will tell you your performance on the above measures and how it compares with your baseline. For example, your reaction time is 20% slower than baseline, and Druid also gives you your total impairment score compared to your baseline, and gives you our current best estimate of your impairment score's equivalent blood alcohol concentration. So that's the problem with these impairment tests, is without your baseline, law enforcement's going to have to assume some baseline. They're going to have to say somebody who gets fewer than 12 circles, or estimate 60 seconds longer than 5 seconds, or misses 4 of the squares or more. They're going to have to set some level that says you're too impaired to drive. And for various reasons, like I just mentioned, some people may not be able to make that baseline even though they're not impaired. So, what if we require everybody who's a driver to get a baseline test? Well, this would take quite a bit, right? You'd have to make it keyed to them getting their driver's license renewal, or their first driver's license, right? Make that part of the driver's license test. So when you get your driver's license test, you got to take the Druid test. You got to set your baseline to how well you count 60 seconds and how many circles you can trace and how many squares you can count and all that stuff, how well you balance on one leg. Set your own baseline, put that and store it into a computer, and then when the cops pull you over 4 or 5 years later, they do the Druid test and they compare it with your baseline score that's stored in the database back at the station, or at the, you know, the state, I guess. Well, the problem with that, again, you might have suffered an injury or an illness between now and the time you're pulled over that makes you unable to match your old baseline. And if I'm going in to get my driver's license renewed and I know there's a test that's going to be the baseline for how good of a driver I am, I'm going to go into that test fucked up. I'm going to simulate like I'm fucked up. I'm going to purposefully do bad at the 60-second test. I'm going to purposefully miss a bunch of the squares or circles so that if I am pulled over fucked up, then I can at least do as good as my baseline. So what would they have to do to prevent that? They'd have to insist that before you got your driver's license, you had to pass a certain baseline of the Druid test. If they do that, then they make it so that there's a baseline for the Druid test that would apply as a default, but then a baseline you set when you take your test, your initial test, could be higher than that baseline. In essence, we could end up, if we do well on the test, making it easier for them to bust us as DUI people by doing well at the test. We'd be better off to try to score as low on the test as we can, but still meet the threshold. So that's the kind of, like, I just was thinking through this as I was reading on this Druid, and that was the first thing that popped in my head, is like, if there's a baseline and I've got to set this baseline for law enforcement to determine whether or not they can put cuffs on me, you goddamn right, I'm going to make that baseline as low as I can possibly make it. So those are some of the confounding problems I can think of when it comes to this impairment testing. And it might be some things we need to think about strongly before we start advocating for it to be the standard rather than pee tests or hair tests or blood tests or saliva tests. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out politically. if not scientifically.
I can't do reefer comedy. I'm drunk. Two different animals.
All right, that sound means that it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. That means that it's time for us to go to our union-mandated safety briefing. And let's see, am I going to be safe? Oh, yeah, it looks like I'm going to be safe. Got a lot of safety right there. Stay tuned. We're back. We're going to talk about the marijuana money trail and some yellow journalism right after this.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank you for being the cannabis crusader out there. You're a trusted voice in the industry, so keep doing what you do. Oh. I really appreciate it.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour. And in this segment, we want to talk a little bit about hypocrisy. And for that matter, yellow journalism. There is this story that I found on a website called LifeZet. LifeZette, LifeZet. And it's got a intriguing title. It says, "Follow the Marijuana Money Trail. When someone strongly supports legalization, dig deeper to see how that person benefits from it." Oh, okay. Playing the Upton Sinclair card, huh? Okay. So, yeah, let's see the Marijuana Money Trail. This is written by a woman named Carlene Wild for LifeZet. And let me just read it to you, because it's amazing. It's an amazing piece. Let me just read it. "It should come as no surprise that the most vocal opponents to any rollback of marijuana policy are those making money on the growth of the industry, or that the loudest proponents of new legislation, including lawmakers, may be looking to line their pockets through various private investments in pot-related businesses. The Washington Post this week published an op-ed, "The Trump Administration's Nonsensical Stance on Marijuana," by Sam Kamen, the Vicente Cederberg Professor of Marijuana Law and Policy at the University of Denver. Kamen makes the case for declassifying marijuana as a Schedule I drug, pointing out that President Trump has been sympathetic toward those who use marijuana medicinally, and if that's the case, then it should not be listed alongside heroin and LSD. He went on to point out the other potential benefits of marijuana, including how it could reverse the epidemic of opioid abuse and deaths, and the limits of law enforcement in enforcing current marijuana laws anyway. Kamen's job as a law professor at the University of Denver, however, is funded by Vicente Cederberg, the biggest marijuana industry consulting firm in the country. Dr. Kevin Sabet, president and CEO of Smart Approaches to Marijuana, said, quote,
So it should be pretty obvious why he doesn't want federal law enforced. His job depends on a thriving industry. End quote. So I just want to reach out to Colleen Wilde here. And Carlene Wilde. And ask how you can talk to Dr. Kevin Sabet and have him, with a straight face, tell you that a professor of marijuana policy's job depends on a thriving marijuana industry, and not ask the logical follow-up, who pays for you, Dr. Kevin Sabet? Who pays your salary? Who makes up the board of Project SAM? Oh, that's right. A whole bunch of people from Big Rehab. The rehab industry. My God. Playing the Upton Sinclair card, trying to paint the proponents of marijuana legalization as only supporting legalization because there's a financial incentive there, and the old paid shill argument. And when you're talking to the biggest paid shill for prohibition there is. When you fail to question what organizations, what politicians, and what industries benefit from keeping marijuana prohibited. So, of course, Jeffrey Zinsmeister, the vice president of Project SAM, points out that academic chairs or professorships such as Cayman's are being funded by marijuana, just as R.J. Reynolds did at Duke. And they point out Dr. Dan Morhaime, who fought to legalize medical use in Maryland, admits he should have been more transparent about his role in a medical marijuana company. So Sabet told LifeZet, quote, "In states with legal marijuana, we are reliving the painful history of our experience with big tobacco. They're targeting minority communities to sell their products and increasingly donating campaign cash to politicians in an effort to push back against even the most sensible regulations designed to protect public health and safety. While advocates are quick to tout tax revenue as a counterbalance to this arrangement, like with the lottery, this is not materializing. In Washington state, over half of the revenue promised for drug prevention and treatment programs never came about. And in Colorado, bureaucracy to regulate the industry continues to consume a large percentage of the revenue made." End quote. So he's complaining that we didn't institute more regulations on the industry, and in the same paragraph complaining that bureaucracy consumes much of the revenue being generated by marijuana. But let's put some more regulations on them. Okay. Well, first of all, the big tobacco scare is just about all Kevin Sabet's got left in the playbook. It's about all he's got. He predicted that marijuana would be like alcohol and tobacco. The tax revenues we receive from it would just be a pittance compared to the social costs. He oftentimes touted that for every $1 of taxes we get from alcohol and tobacco, they cost $10 in social costs. But now that Colorado and Washington have raised $200 million in tax revenue, Kevin Sabet is eerily silent about the supposed $2 billion in social costs that this should have wrought, according to his predictions. Hell, I'd be willing to give him a push if he could even show $200 million in social costs from marijuana. Not even considering the reduced costs in the courts, in the probation offices, in the drug testing, in the police overtime from not policing marijuana crimes. Don't even count that. Let's consider just the social costs of marijuana legalization. I defy you to show me $200 million there. And to continue this scare, this attempt to dissuade African Americans and Latinos from supporting marijuana legalization by saying they're targeting minority communities to sell their products. That's got to be a real tough argument to make with a straight face when currently cartels are targeting minority communities. Gangs are targeting minority communities. Street corner dealers are targeting minority communities.
Kevin Sabet acts as if marijuana needs to be promoted and marketed before people will want it. Somehow, with zero advertising budget, zero public relations, zero government encouragement, zero corporate marketing from 1960 to 2012, somehow we went from a few hundred thousand marijuana smokers to over 30 million. Doesn't seem like they needed much encouragement. Doesn't seem like they needed much advertisement. Seems like the product kind of sells itself. But this is what we're going to continue to hear. The big tobacco arguments, all they've got, and they try so painfully to make that comparison. When Zinsmeister says, well, Duke funded a tobacco chair at the, R.J. Reynolds funded the tobacco chair at Duke University. He's trying to make that connection. See, they're just like big tobacco. See, the difference, though, is that big tobacco had to fund an academic chair to counter to counter factual information being given by the government about the harmfulness of tobacco. The Duke chair had to promote lies to counter the government's truth. The Vicente Cederberg chair at the University of Denver exists to produce truth to counter the government's lies. So while both tobacco and cannabis have funded academic chairs, tobacco did so to spread lies, cannabis did so to spread facts. That's the crucial difference. Zinsmeister will be the first to tell you the government, the Surgeon General, and many states were saying that tobacco was a harmful product, while the tobacco industry was lying about it, saying it wasn't. The opposite is true of cannabis. The government is saying it's a harmful product and lying about that. The harm from tobacco was scientifically accurate, scientifically true. These harms that people like Sessions like to say about marijuana, that it's a gateway drug, that it's super potent now, that it's causing these problems, causing crime, are counterfactual. And we are coming forth with the truth to break that. That's the difference. And really, what a bit of journalistic malpractice here to cast aspersions on the legalization movement being all about trying to make the money and have absolutely zero curiosity as to how we got marijuana prohibited in the first place, why we have the pharmaceutical industries ponying up six-figure donations to fight against legalization in Arizona, why we have the gaming industry ponying up seven-figure donations to fight the legalization in Nevada, why we have cop organizations in California and Massachusetts ponying up five-figure donations to stop marijuana legalization. You cannot seriously, with a straight face, criticize our side of the marijuana legalization movement as being paid shills, as doing this to benefit our bottom line. You cannot pull the Upton Sinclair card on legalization without dealing the Upton Sinclair full house on the side of prohibition. It is clear that this prohibition has been maintained contrary to every government report that has ever been commissioned on the subject. Let me repeat that. Every government that has ever studied the notion of what should we do about pot smokers has come to the conclusion that it should be decriminalized.
going back to the 1898 British East Indies study, going back to the 1942 LaGuardia Commission study, going back to the 1972 Schaefer Commission study, going back to the 1999 Institute of Medicine study, going back to the 72 Consumer Reports study. Every major organization or government that has addressed the question of pot smoking, marijuana consumption, cannabis, has said it should be decriminalized. So for Life Zet and for Carlene Wild to completely ignore that side of the story shows you who the true paid shills are. It's the prohibition side that has no fact, science, reason, logic, compassion, truth, or evidence on their side. All they've got is rhetoric. All they got is hot air, scaremongering, demonization, racism, bigotry, and the status quo. All right, when we come back, some more from the news wires, how pot stocks are plunging in Trumpistan, medical cannabis for Ireland, for Wales, and for Australia. International stories when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
And I think personally that they should legalize drugs, all drugs, so that they can control them, tax them, provide prevention and treatment programs just like they do for alcohol.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 38 after the hour, and looking for more silver linings here in Trumpistan when it comes to marijuana legalization. One of those may be that pot stocks are going to get awful cheap. Might be able to swoop in and buy you a whole bunch of bargain stocks. There's a story up on CNN Money by Aaron Smith, and I don't know if this is the same Aaron Smith that's with National Cannabis Industries Association. I don't think it is. It's probably a pretty common name. The title is Trump is a Buzzkill for Pot Stocks. It goes on to point out that pot stocks have been getting killed since last week when Spicer had this to say about marijuana legalization.
You said you will see greater enforcement of it?
I would refer you to the Department of Justice. I think then that's what I said. Okay. But I think the Department of Justice is the lead on that. It is something that you should follow up with them, but I believe that they are going to continue to enforce the laws and the books with respect to recreational marijuana.
So we've got a company that trades on the major stock exchanges. This is Innovative Industrial Properties. Its stock ticker is IIPR. They buy buildings and then lease them to medical marijuana growers. They have dropped every trading day since Sean Spicer said that, a total of nearly 8% in their stock value. That includes a 5% drop on Friday
when he said that greater enforcement quote. And as we look at where most of the pot stocks are traded out there on the penny stocks, the over-the-counter stock exchange, we've got Buds, B-U-D-Z. That's a company called Weed Inc. They purchase land to lease to growers. They plunged 10%. Other penny pot stocks include Medical Marijuana Inc., M-J-N-A, Hemp Inc. at Hemp, H-E-M-P, Grow Life at P-H-O-T, and Pineapple Express, P-N-P-L, all suffered steep declines on that same day. Now, Weed, the Buds, B-U-D-Z stock, is down 11.41% today. It's currently trading at $3.34. The Medical Marijuana Inc. Is down, well, it's just about even, but it's currently trading at about 12 cents. Hemp is about even, trading at 4 cents. Grow Life is still about even at a penny. And Pineapple Express, penny and a half, 1.57, down about 7%. The investors could be fleeing medical marijuana companies too, according to Aaron Smith at CNN Money, because their options for growth into recreational have become narrower. And keep in mind that a lot of these medical marijuana investments may be tied somewhat to the recreational industry. Washington State has done a lot of the merging of their two systems. So teasing out whether your money is in rec or your money's in medical is kind of a little harder to do now in that state. Now, pot stocks are going the opposite direction of the Dow industrials, which have been hitting record highs. So the CEO of Innovative Industrial Properties, his name is Paul Smithers. He told CNN Money he takes a lot of comfort in the distinction Spicer and Trump seem to recognize between medical and recreational, saying, quote, "I think you could go crazy trying to parse every comment from Sessions until there is an official position taken from the White House and Attorney General's office as to how to proceed with the medical markets. As far as what happens on the recreational side, I don't think we'll be impacted going forward." So that's something you may add to your evaluation as to where we're at here in Trumpistan, that some of the money people, the investors, are starting to pull their money out of these pot stocks. Something to think about. Now, let's take a look at some international stories. Medical marijuana is a story all across the globe as different countries are taking more progressive approaches than the United States. Our first story comes out of The Age in Australia. The state of Victoria is importing medical cannabis from Canada. Last Friday, a 5-year-old girl who has nearly constant seizures, her name is Gemma, she became one of the first of 29 seriously ill children to receive imported medicinal oil from Canada in the Australian state of Victoria. This is fully taxpayer funded, folks. That's right. The government in Australia is spending tax dollars to import cannabidiol oil from Canada to give to the families of epileptic kids for free. That's what other countries are doing when they figure out that cannabis can help save the lives of epileptic kids. They figure, oh, that is a good thing. Let's use some money to make that happen. In our country, our federal government still goes out of its way to tell people that cannabidiol is illegal and starts seizing CBD products. This is going to cost the state of Victoria $1 million to supply these 29 families for a year. And the Victorian Health Minister, Jill Hennessy, said that the government's focus was still, quote, a domestic supply of medicinal cannabis, end quote. So the premier of Victoria said that we couldn't wait for our state to produce a cannabis crop. So let's go ahead
and start importing it. He said, quote, but on compassionate grounds and on the advice of some legal experts, we've been able to import some product and we're able to make sure patients like Gemma and others can get the care they need. For the first time ever, patients, particularly kids across Victoria, will be able to get the legal medicinal cannabis they need for the very first time. End quote. Victoria was the first state in Australia to legalize access to medical marijuana to treat seriously ill children about a year ago. Wow. Good on you, Australia. Also in the news in medical cannabis, we go across the pond to the nation of Wales, part of the United Kingdom, where one of the parties there, Plaid Cymru, one of their leaders, Leanne Wood, is calling for the use of medicinal cannabis to be decriminalized. She's calling on the Welsh government to make the Class B drug available for people who have multiple sclerosis and other conditions. This is reported by Wales Online. She met with members of a group of people with multiple sclerosis who are calling for the decriminalization of medical cannabis. There's also support for decriminalization in Scotland, and Wales was the first country in the UK to approve GW Pharmaceuticals' cannabis-based drug Sativex. So she met with people that are currently using cannabis as a replacement and asks, how is it okay to take morphine, but buying cannabis, she risks prosecution? They say the Sativex isn't widely available, and allowing patients, Welsh patients, to be able to use cannabis would relieve their symptoms of multiple sclerosis. And in the story, they note that Ireland, Canada, Germany, and the Netherlands have all legalized medical cannabis. And speaking of Ireland, we have a story from the Irish Examiner, where the Irish Pain Society backs the use of medical cannabis. So this follows a report from the country's Health Product Regulatory Authority. They came out and recommended against the use of medical cannabis to treat chronic pain. The Irish Pain Society says, hold on, quote, overall, the Irish Pain Society considers the HPRA report to be a well-researched, well-written, and important contribution to the debate on medical cannabis and cannabinoids, and the HPRA should be commended for preparing such a thorough report at relatively short notice. Controversially, however, the HPRA report recommended against the use of medical cannabis for the treatment of chronic pain. The view of the executive committee of the Irish Pain Society is that medical cannabis or cannabinoid-containing medicine should be prescribed initially by a pain specialist consultant only to any patient with chronic cancer or non-cancer pain that has failed to respond adequately or has experienced an unacceptable level of adverse side effects to other analgesic medications whilst under expert medical supervision, end quote. So we've got the country's regulatory authority saying no medical cannabis, the country's pain society saying yes medical cannabis. But they've got that disclaimer, right? They've got the medicine of last resort disclaimer. Only for pain that has failed to respond adequately or experienced an unacceptable level of adverse side effects to other analgesic medications. Take the acetaminophen, take the naproxen, take the aspirin, take the opiates. And then, if it doesn't help you, we'll let you smoke some pot. Boy, I'm so tired of the medicine of last resort stand. Now, I know these people do it. These organizations do it. It's kind of a cover your ass. It's their way of saying we're not encouraging marijuana use. But gosh, I mean, gee whiz, if someone's really suffering, oh gosh, we just have to let them, don't we? Instead of taking the bold stance, of the radical stance, if you will, of saying no, cannabis ought to be the medicine of first resort. With its low incidence of side effects, with its efficacy, how well it's tolerated,
It should be the first thing you try. It's non-toxic. It's not habit-forming. In what other practice of medicine do we insist on people leaving the least harmful, most effective treatment as their last option? Where else does that happen? Where else do we make that our standard operating procedure? All right, look, we're going to give you some fentanyl for the pain, but if that doesn't work, we've got some baby aspirin for you. It just doesn't happen anywhere, does it? That's how seriously ingrained cannabophobia is. Cannabigotry is. It's so seriously ingrained in our social fabric that people make a moral judgment about it. That's all that is a moral judgment. There's no scientific judgment about that. Comparing the side effects, the risks, and the efficacy of other pain medications compared to cannabis, cannabis wins hands down. So there's no logical reason to make someone try all the other drugs first and then cannabis. The only reason is a moral reason, because those other drugs are good, acceptable drugs, and cannabis is the evil, illicit, habit, dirty drug. Stop it. Grow up. You're pain specialist. You should know better. All right, we're back right after this. I'm going to talk about the Veterans Administration.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Cool.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Almost 53 after the hour as we wind things up here on Wednesday. Quick reminder for tomorrow's show, we reinstate our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment, but joining us will be Patrick Nightingale. And since LEAP is now Law Enforcement Action Partnership, we're going to expand our discussions to more on criminal justice reform in general, not just the drug war. Although we will still talk to these LEAP cops about the drug war from time to time. Patrick's going to talk to us about the private prison industry and the seeming increase in its use that is being being asked for by the Trump administration. So that's on tomorrow's show. He'll be joining us at half past the first hour here on the Russ Belville Show. Patrick Nightingale from Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Now, I wanted to talk about this story about the Veterans Administration. I saw this come through on the Daily Caller, and this really popped to the top of my list primarily because of the headline. And the headline, well, it caught my attention because of all of these attempts by Sean Spicer and Jeff Sessions to link the heroin epidemic to marijuana, their whole belief in the gateway drug theory, right? So This headline caught me because of this, because it says, quote, VA vows to increase employee drug testing to weed out opioid theft. See what they did there? Weed out. Weed out. Get it? Weed out. See, headlines don't happen on accident, right? That, like, it's when I write articles, and I'm published at least once a day on a marijuana article somewhere, usually two, sometimes three articles a day. And if anything gets changed about what I write, it's usually the headline. And oftentimes the headline is changed to make it shorter. You take out a long word, put in a short word. That's why sometimes you'll see pot instead of marijuana or cannabis, right? Because pot's only three letters, right? But other times headlines are written in such a way, especially on the internet, to generate clicks. And that's what I think is going on here. I think they throw the word weed in there to generate more clicks, right? VA vows to increase employee drug testing to weed out opioid theft. How else could you have written that headline? To root out opioid theft, to reduce opioid theft, to eliminate, to stop, to address. Any number of those are the same number of characters or fewer characters than weed out. But since it's a drug story, throw the word weed in there, we'll get some more hits. Obviously it worked, because this is the one I clicked on. There were a lot of outlets reporting about this, but I clicked on the one that had weed in it. So here's what's going on. The Department of Veterans Affairs say there's increasing theft of prescription drugs from their facilities, and the way they want to address that is drug testing of their employees. Right, because drug testing will tell you whether or not someone's a thief. I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, oh, if someone's stealing the OxyContin, we'll drug test them, and if they turn up positive for OxyContin, that'll show that. But again, how many times do we have to say it? Drugs like OxyContin flush from your system relatively rapidly. The chance you're going to catch someone is going to be dependent on them using it all the time. But second of all, drug testing all your VA employees is essentially taking their Fourth Amendment rights from them for no reasonable suspicion. If I worked for the VA and someone was stealing the OxyContin, I'd be offended if you wanted piss from me when I'm not stealing that. That's not me. I'm not. Why do you suspect me? Just because I work here? One bad apple mean one bad apple at the VA stealing some oxy means that we all have to be drug tested? Is that what this is? I wish there was that kind of blanket suspicion when we had a problem with a bad cop. How is it that Jeff Sessions wants to tell us that, they're unfairly portraying all law enforcement is bad when it's just the actions of a couple bad cops? But the actions of a couple bad VA employees means we have to drug test all of them? Funny how that works. So they are in the process of hiring additional inspectors to keep better track of drug inventories as well, but they're going to increase the drug testing because they say there was 272 cases of drug theft from federal medical hospitals in 2009. That is up to 2,926 in 2015. There are currently about 100 criminal probes regarding stolen medications from VA hospitals. Cases of clinics skipping monthly inspections. The VA hospital in Washington, D.C. is the worst offender, failed to conduct monthly inspections of their drug supplies more than 40% of the time. Well, folks, that's all the time we got for today's show. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate each and every one of you. If you'd like to help donate to keep the show on the air, you can do so by sending a donation to paypal.me/radicalruss. paypal.me/radicalruss. The more donations we get, the faster we get the VIP system online, and you're able to get that Hour 2 podcast that you're looking for. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, Take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I don't drink, I don't smoke pot, but I drink and I smoke pot. And I will tell you that there is a huge difference between marijuana and alcohol.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.